Hello, and welcome to True Romance. This is Devin Leary, and I'm here with...
Catalina Barlow. Dev, how is your week going?
This week I'm good. I socialized twice this weekend, meaning did social distanced outdoor hangs with friends. I have learned that I have completely reverted to being 13 years old in terms of my socialization skills. When the person talks to me, it takes me so long to formulate the correct response that I just don't say anything, and then they move on to the next sentence. It's tough. And I was second-guessing everything I said.
I really think that we're all going to be struggling with this as we slowly integrate back into society in the next year or so. I know for me, I have general panic around socializing with people. I've gotten used to Zoom. I'm excited to see people on Zoom for business meetings, etc. But I have always been kind of a homebody, and this has just made me retreat even more into my shell. So I don't know. I really need to get used to hanging out with people and meeting people. And because I do love being social, but yeah, this has taken me back to a state that I haven't really been in since I was like 19, where I'm very socially uncomfortable. And I think that I'm proud of myself for taking social distancing so seriously. And I'm proud of people like you who are doing that as well, because I think that we are really working and doing our best to flatten the curve. I think some people are working against us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking, of course, of people who go to Trump rallies.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do think that there are going to be social consequences. And, you know, I would love to watch a movie a la How Stella Got Her Groove Back. But it's really about coming out of the pandemic and learning how to be a functioning social person again.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to go to some listeners' topics. We've been getting, yet again, some amazing questions. Questions that I haven't even known how to respond to. And so I've literally thought, in the dark of night, staring at my bright phone light, I need to get to my best friend Devin about these. This one comes from Bonita.
Beautiful.
Hi, Carolina and Devin. I love your podcast. Thank you.
Thanks.
My question is, do you think it is possible to be in love and have a great long-term relationship if it didn't start with all the gushy, fluttery, oxytocin, obsessed feelings in the beginning? I've been with my significant other for 7 months now, this time around, and we dated for 6 months about 3 years ago. He is perfect in every way, makes me laugh constantly, treats me better than anyone, and I feel like I am in love with him, but it didn't start with those gushy feelings I have had in the past. At first, I thought maybe it's because he makes me feel so secure. Good point. But my last long-term relationship, he made me feel secure, and I had those amazing drug-like feelings the whole time. The rest of my long-term relationships were with assholes, so yeah, I felt a drug-like rush when they did give me attention.
Mm-hmm.
I also realized with my current guy that I don't get obsessed thinking about our future. I feel warm when I think about him in the future, but I'm not doing any of that fantasizing about a wedding or moving in, etc. I have only known love to be intense and full of obsession, so this whole thing is weird. Wonder what you guys think about it. Devin, what do you think about this?
So I think that it's, first of all, a very relatable thing. I think it's a really subjective case-by-case thing, because I think chemistry and connection is so specific to each relationship. I don't think it's like a unanimous blanket thing of this is the kind of chemistry you should have, this is the kind of chemistry you shouldn't have. And I do have friends who are with people who are their soulmates. They have great functioning partnerships or relationships, who have told me that they didn't necessarily have like butterflies and gushy, like, you know, fireworks feelings, but that it was more of just like a slow connection that turned out to be great and reliable. So I think that's definitely possible. I also really relate to the idea of being in a secure relationship after being in toxic, kind of turbulent ones, and thinking if someone seems like safe, is that all that matters? Or should I hold out for something that seems really special? The relationship I'm in now, the person I'm with makes me feel completely supported and secure and safe, and all the things that people talk about that you need for like a functioning, healthy relationship that I didn't even believe were possible before. But I did also have the oxytocin butterfly highs with him, and I still have them, and I'm still obsessed with him in both healthy and unhealthy ways. So I think that like having a secure partnership that like is healthy and serves both people and all the good things, it's possible to have that and have like the passion, excitement, fire, and all that stuff. But again, I think it's like specific to each situation. And it sounds like this is the person you're with now is someone you've known for a really long time. That could factor into it. The things you describe about him are really important things, like that he makes you laugh and feel secure and warm. Those things are really hard to find. So I think it's a question of if something really in your gut feels like it's missing, because someone can be perfect and check all the boxes and not be the right person for you. So I think that probably comes in the form of like a gut feeling of like something is actually missing. And I think that everyone has to unfortunately ask themselves that question, which is one of the biggest challenges of relationships in my experience, is that I've always been like, can someone just tell me, like, is this the person forever, or is this the person that, like, or should we break up? Like, should we be together? Should we not? Like, can someone just say, like, tell me?
But that's your gut too. And I know what you mean. It takes a lot of introspection. And I think I can confuse my gut with fear. So I'm like, I have this instinct and it's that we need to break up right now. And I think that whenever I have a feeling that's like that out of urgency, I really need to sit with it. You know, I really love the feeling of being calm in relationships. So this actually sounds like an ideal scenario to me personally. I also have loved having the experience of falling in love, but I can sometimes come to relationships in a little bit of an, you can call it, unromantic approach, where I'm looking for a partner. You know, so I'm looking for someone I can rely on. I'm looking for someone who I enjoy spending time with, who adds to my life. You know, those obsessive feelings, if I want a long-term relationship, aren't going to last all the time. Now, that being said, physical attraction is really important in a relationship. So if it gets to that physical level where, you know, and this isn't said in insult to your partner, but if you feel like repulsed by the idea of hooking up with him, yeah, that's a serious thing to investigate. You kind of have to sort out what, like you said, is this my response? Is this my response to healthy behavior? Am I sort of bored by someone who's not putting me in the instinct of fear? And then to just be fully aware if you want to break up, why you're breaking up, you know? Because if it's just because I want to feel butterflies, like, yeah, that's, dating definitely gives you that. Or I want a better deal, you know, you're totally allowed to do that whenever you want. But it's just something to keep in mind is, what am I feeling? Am I afraid of, do I want to be single again? Do I want to find someone who I get that oxytocin high with? And at the same time, knowing that what you're describing is rare. Unfortunately, sometimes the only answer is like, time takes time and more will be revealed.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's supposed to work out, there's nothing you can do wrong. And if it's not supposed to work out, there's nothing you can do right. And so I would say stick with it, unless it's an actual arduous trial. But when I got your email, my first instinct is, this girl sounds happy. And there's no need to tear that down until you're absolutely sure that that's what you want to do. We have to get to our next question. This is from Jane. Carolina and Devin, I have been thinking about my sex drive with my significant other and notice it's gone way down from where it was last time in general. However, I stopped drinking in January and used to be a daily/heavy drinker. So my other question is, did you notice in yourself or others that when you stopped drinking, your sex drive went down for a time? Short answer, absolutely. I stopped drinking when I was about 20 years old. I think my dad is smart enough to stop listening to my podcast. But if you are dad, you can
Mom,
tune out
dad,
right now.
Other parents of friends or loved
Catch
ones.
Catch you next time.
Adults in general, please tune out.
This one's for the kids.
Adults that we know, please tune out. Bye.
The first few times I slept with someone sober, obviously I had slept with people sober before because I was in relationships and I wasn't, you know, drunk every time we hooked up. But I always thought that, like, I was kind of bohemian and wild in my high school years. And then when I got sober, I realized that, like, being sober and physically vulnerable is extremely nerve-wracking. Being just fully conscious all the time is kind of wild in itself. And I'm just much more of a prude than I gave myself credit for. Not a complete one, obviously, but it was just very strange is the word I'll use. I felt really nervous and I definitely wasn't free of any inhibition, which had been my experience when I was drinking or drunk or sort of, you know, carelessly forward or anything like that. That all sort of went by the wayside. So, you know, like we were talking about before, socializing, I also didn't even know how to like fully talk to people. I didn't know how to get comfortable with people because when you're literally 20 years old, everything's surrounded by drinking too. So I couldn't really like settle into myself as much as other people could. And that included with a partner. So it took me a really long time. I don't even think about it anymore, if that helps at all. In fact, the idea of having like of hooking up with someone drunk makes me repulsed. And that being said, I remember how much fun being drunk was. So kudos to anyone who's able to still do that. I have no judgment. But for me personally, I wasn't enjoying drinking and that's why I eventually stopped. So the idea of like drinking again or hooking up with a stranger drunk just really doesn't appeal to me. Devin, what do you think?
I think that I have had a very specific experience that I think many people also had, but I didn't even learn how to enjoy sex or understand like my own pleasure until a couple of years after getting sober. And prior to that was completely like kind of disconnected from my own body, if that makes sense. It just was like something that I felt like I was participating in, but it wasn't doing what it was supposed to be doing. Like I was like, okay, either everyone's lying because this is not good or like something's wrong with me. And so probably something's wrong with me, which I then internalized and was like, okay, in the movies, they like make out and then they like start having sex and they like love it. And why do I feel nothing? Like, why do I feel like nothing? Like, besides like a little bit of excitement that like this person's into me and I'm into them. Like, that's all I feel. So I just was really confused when I got sober and I was like, you know, felt really immature and really like I didn't fit in and something was wrong with me again, same thing over and over again. But because I got sober, I was able to become like in touch with my body and present with what was actually happening to me. And I actually learned how to like come out of that. Like I started asking for help and talking to people about it, even though the first times I talked about not ever having an orgasm before, I literally wanted to run in front of a car. Like I was like, okay,
I remember.
Actually,
you're like, I hate this. I hate talking about this.
My skin is on fire actually as we speak, melting. So I can't go on with this conversation. Like someone would be like, have you ever tried sex toys? And I'd be like, no.
You would just hang up on them.
It was like a hard process, but I was like, what else am I going to do? Like, I'm finally for the first time witnessing my own life.
I think that's really interesting, though. And it's something that we can talk about in another podcast probably and should. But that women are such people pleasers and we're so protective of the male ego that it feels crazy to be like, okay, I need to do something different because this isn't enjoyable for me right now.
Yeah. It was so hard to like break down all those years learned things of like, if I don't serve to like make you feel good, you will reject me. Then I have no worth or whatever.
And like, who cares about how I feel during this process? Like, it's really not about me.
Long story short is now, again, my skin is burning even as I'm saying this. And I'm like, I hope my parents cannot hear this, but I bet they can't. Now I love sex so much and it's my favorite feeling on earth. And now I can't imagine.
But what about birthday cake with the birthday cake flavor?
Even better than that.
This is a conundrum. I saw you think about it.
But I just want to say that now I can't imagine like numbing that experience. Like,
yeah,
I can't imagine being like, I'm going to be like a little bit fucked up during this because I would want to like witness every second of it. So that is my hopeful message at the end, is that like now I feel like I've gone through this process and it's like one of the best things that's ever happened to me. And I love being able to like experience every second of it.
I do have to say too, just because Devin and I are two Amish girls who don't drink doesn't mean that we don't know how much fun it is to go through that sort of wild phase. And even if you're, you know, how long that phase lasts, I know for me, it did not work. I know for Devin, it did not work. And at the same time, though, the idea that I was like some fallen woman or that people were judging me when I was, you know, someone who drank and hooked up with guys a lot made it even worse. So I definitely don't want to ascribe any judgment to people who are enjoying that time of their life right now.
We have to take a quick break before we get into our amazing guest interview. So we'll be right back.
Earth shattering.
I want truth.
Welcome back. Today on True Romance, we are absolutely freaking out. As Brittany Cartwright would say, we are on the brim of freaking out because
I live on the brim. I live right on the brim.
We are living on the brim of freaking out because our guest today is the hilarious, brilliant, iconic writer, comedian, content creator, the host of one of my personal favorite podcasts, Everything Iconic with Danny Pellegrino, which is a comedic pop culture podcast that's available on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. And he co-authored the best-selling book Fancy AF Cocktails with some Vanderpump Rules stars that we all know and love. His work has also been featured on Cosmo, Us Weekly, Billboard, BuzzFeed, and Refinery 29, among other things. And you know he has appeared on the Mecca Watch What Happens Live. Jennifer Garner famously said he cracks her up, and Catherine McPhee famously said that he is iconic. Please welcome to the show, Danny Pellegrino.
Wow, that intro. I was reading my bio. I felt so I'm blushing right now. I'm so happy to be here.
We literally quoted two of our friends, Jennifer Garner and Catherine McPhee.
My voice cracked at the end because that was so long. I was like, Danny Pellegrino.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. You know, both of those quotes I have on my website. And I also have a quote from Nikki Blonsky from the movie Hairspray that says, and the quote is, "Who's that?" Because she was scheduled. She was scheduled on my show and then had forgotten that she was scheduled on my show. And so when I called for our scheduled time, she just was like so confused as to who was calling. It was a journey. But anyway, the point is, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you both so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. We're so excited.
I can't even tell you what a big deal this was.
So you guys are Bravo fans.
I am a Bravo fanatic. So is my mom. I'm quarantined with my mom right now. And when I told her that you were coming on the podcast, I've never seen her more proud. Like, she like dropped her fork and was like, "What? What? When? Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. What are you going to ask?" And it was so like a fulfilling dream moment for me.
What's your mom's name?
Anne Leary.
Anne. Hi, Anne. I hope she's listening. My mom doesn't listen to my podcast, so I'm honored for you that your mom listens, because she, Linda Pellegrino, cannot be bothered by my show.
That's so funny.
She still gets so confused as to who I'm, like the Bravo people. She doesn't know any of them because she doesn't watch. And so she's always confused when I'm trying to explain someone like Teresa Giudice to her or something. Like,
yeah, my mom is well versed.
My dad will literally post on social media about other podcasts. Like, he'll be like, oh, I checked out this really cool podcast. I was like, are you? Like, I literally released a new episode today. Meanwhile, our producer, Will Ferrell, every week is like, hey, guys, great episode. I'm like, wait, you are our most loyal listener. Like, how is that possible that you get our episodes before our parents do?
I love that. By the way, though, Will Ferrell is just the funniest human in the world. Like, he is so hysterically funny. He's one of the few straight men that really like makes me laugh. Like, you mm-hmm. think like he's genuinely one of the only funny straight men in my eyes.
I totally agree.
I always tell people that he is everything you want him to be in person. Like, I don't know how to encapsulate how amazing he is as a human being. So I want people to know that he is everything you want him to be. Like, he's everything you hope for him to be, because there's always that, you know, that saying like, don't meet your heroes. And mm-hmm. if anything, when you meet him, you're like, wait, are you doing a bit that you're so nice? Like, are you being sarcastic? But he's just really so nice. But
that makes me so happy. I just feel relieved to know, you know, you want your heroes to be good people. And so it's nice to know when like someone like Will Ferrell is genuinely a nice human.
I know. It reminds me of Devin. Who is the Bravo star who invited you and your mom to an event?
Oh, God. So
please tell me. Oh, my God.
This is some drama that I think you will like, Danny, because you are a ghostwriter, correct?
Right.
So this is very niche ghostwriting drama, but basically my mom, she is friends with a prolific ghostwriter who shall remain anonymous. And her friend was asked to ghostwrite Aviva Drescher's book, but said no. But because she was asked, obviously confirmed this question that was a huge part of the season's drama that season, which was, did Aviva have a ghostwriter? So my mom was like, okay, so I'm getting some intel here.
I love that.
So I know. So then somehow, like, my mom knows someone that knows Carol Radswell. My mom's an author, so it's like someone in the literary world. Put them in touch, and Carol asked if she could talk to my mom, and I will or will not, actually I will not say if she was calling about the ghostwriting scandal, but she wanted to talk to my mom about something, so she did. They had a conversation. I can't say it was my mom confirming the drama about Aviva or not, but
we're reading between the lines here.
Yeah, you can read between the lines. You can just take a quick look between the lines.
I was so fascinated by all that ghostwriting drama from The Real Housewives of New York that season. It was so compelling and, yeah, just so fascinating. What was Aviva's book name? It was like One-Legged Woman or something. It had one-legged in the title. Just being funny. That was like in the title, I think.
It was also like, it was funny because Carol is actually, for all her flaws, because I did end up being Team Bethany after the events that occurred, which I'll tell you about in a second. But it was funny because she is actually an established journalist and author. And Aviva was like, yeah, like she got a book deal because she's a real housewife and she was trying to compare it, whatever.
It was very frustrating. I felt bad for Carol too in that moment because also, it's like there's so many people that are a book goes through, and
yes,
so it's like the even Carol had an editor that she was talking about, and Aviva was saying the editor was the ghostwriter, but it's like an editor will edit your book and they do help you kind of shape the book, but they're not writing the book. It was very clear that was Carol's book, and so I would have been livid just as she was if somebody said that I had a ghostwriter and I didn't.
I know. I imagine I would too. But yeah, so basically, long story short, Carol said on the phone kind of casually like, oh, you and your daughter should come to the premiere of this season of Real Housewives of New York. And my mom was like, okay, yeah, we'd be interested.
For sure.
But then apparently Carol sent this like save the date email kind of, but it wasn't a formal RSVP, but my mom took it to be a formal like invite RSVP, but we actually never received the formal invite. but we chose to be in denial about that and show up at the Real Housewives of New York premiere party. I spent all day telling everyone I know, obviously, that I was going. We get there, we get to the door, and the bouncer is very confused as to our presence and asks us to please leave because we were not on the list. But we did get to see Sonia roll up, wasted, glowing, looking amazing, with like a posse of 15 fabulous people, and like roll into the party, which I loved. So I guess it was worth it in the end.
You know, I feel like you got the better experience anyway, because the fun happens with the women just sort of rolling up into the venue, and maybe the drama that happens leading up to the venue.
Yes.
But the actual event, you probably didn't miss anything. It was probably very basic, but you got the good stuff, because I'm sure Sonia Morgan, I can only imagine how many vodka sodas deep she was or whatever she was drinking that day.
I know. She looked like she was having a good time.
And it was sort of like on The Real Houses of Atlanta when, I think it was season one, when Kim and Nene showed up to Sheree's house and Sheree didn't have Nene on the list. So
yes.
It was basically the same thing.
Never forget that. No. When Kim is like hanging out of the side of the SUV and she's like, what do you mean? So good.
I miss, you know, like I don't watch Kim's Zolciak spinoff. But I miss just like season one Kim with the cigarette in the hand.
Yes.
And her and Nene going about town. Like there was no better duo than those early Nene Kim scenes.
I totally agree. By the way, our producer just chatted us that Aviva Drescher's memoir was called Leggy Blonde, a Memoir, because she's missing one leg.
I would like to apologize that I thought the title was One Legged Woman. I would just like to formally apologize. But it did have leggy in the title, so I feel like I was in the ballpark.
This makes me think of the Lindsay Lohan movie, I Know Who Killed Me, where she plays a stripper with one leg.
Yes.
And I always, whenever I think of that, I think of like her agent being like, Lindsay, we've got it's a really dark role. You
the Mean Girls days are over, Lindsay.
We want you. This is like you want the Oscar. You want the Golden Globe. This is a gritty role. You're a stripper with one leg. And she's like, "Yeah, I will take on the challenge."
Did you guys watch The Comeback with Lisa Kudrow?
I watched some of the first season, but I shamefully never continued, which I know I have to.
Well, first of all, how dare you both?
I know.
But second of all, there's this moment in the first season, because I was just rewatching one of the episodes, and there's this moment where the character of Valerie Cherish, played by Lisa Kudrow, she's like a sort of washed up actress. Mm-hmm. And there's a throwaway line where she talks about, she's like, remember when I did that Hallmark movie about the woman with the headaches? And it just makes me laugh. It's like so stupid.
The woman with the headaches.
It like cracks me up. The Hallmark movie about the woman with the headaches is just so funny.
I love it.
We wanted to ask about your gateway to, like, what was your gateway reality TV show?
Oh, gosh. Well, I watched all the early stuff of, like, The Real World. I remember getting really obsessed with The Real World around circa Hawaii. Do you remember, like, the Hawaii season? I feel like that was...
I remember that one was really, really gnarly when, like, alcoholism was involved and the crew chased a girl who's driving drunk. And, yeah, I remember parts of that one.
Yeah, that one was a little bit more wild. And then even more wild was the Las Vegas season, which remember that one?
Pregnancy.
That started with a threesome.
In the hot tub.
Yeah. Oh,
that was
Trish.
Good.
Remember Trish?
Trishelle. Yeah, Trishelle. Trishelle and I sometimes DM online.
I love that so much.
How's she doing?
I think she's good. She's got a nice husband. I forget, now I'm blanking, but she's very sweet. And she's very sweet.
I love social media has given me those moments of all of a sudden a person will come to me out of thin air, whether it be like someone I knew in third grade whose name I suddenly remember, or a Trishelle or a Carmen Electra, you know, and I'll be like, I need to know right now what's going on.
Carolina, I was literally like in this wormhole the other day of Daisy Fuentes's Instagram. And that was a similar thing where I was like, I didn't even remember this human existed. And then I spent like 20 minutes just like looking at her whole Instagram thing. And I was like, I totally forgot this name.
And when I find it, I'm relieved. I'm like, oh, there you are.
Like they haven't passed.
Yeah. Or they haven't become a Trump supporter. That's the two questions. There's a lot of the Disney Channel stars I'll look up and then I'll be like, you know what? I wish I didn't go here.
Right.
I wish I still had them in my memory as a different person than this.
Devin, what was your gateway?
Oh, to reality TV?
Yeah.
Marijuana? No, I'm kidding. I was actually just down this wormhole of the first reality show I ever watched, which was Bug Juice on Disney Channel.
Classic.
Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
It was a reality show about kids at camp.
Oh, yes, I do remember this.
Yeah.
I loved any sort of camp stuff when I was a kid, and I remember just that show on Disney Channel was amazing.
Okay, did you watch on MTV the Fat Camp reality show?
Of course.
So good.
No, wait, what is this?
It was True Life, I'm Going to Fat Camp.
No, it wasn't that. This was a very specific, like, following 6 or 7 kids going to a camp for weight loss.
Was this back in the day or, like, recent?
It was early 2000s. It wasn't a vintage thing.
Our producer is telling us that it's called Fat Camp 2006.
Oh, great.
You know, I'm going to have to go back. I'm going to have to go back into the archives and find that on the dark web somewhere, because I would like to read that or watch that.
Yeah.
I was a camp junkie and I was overweight as a child. So I would love to. That sounds right up my alley is what I'm saying.
Whoever I talk to, if they didn't have a weight issue as a child, I just can't relate to them. Like, I'm like, we grew up in different worlds. Like, if you felt okay getting into a swimsuit, then you don't understand me. I don't even think you're funny. Like, I don't trust you.
Right. I know. There's definite trust issues. Have you guys watched that Pen 15 show? I know I'm like...
Yes.
No, I love those girls.
It's so good, right? There's an episode, I think it might be in the season that's like about to premiere, where there's a pool party and there's a kid wearing a t-shirt. And I'm like, that was me. Like, I couldn't go to a pool party without wearing a t-shirt the whole time. Yeah.
And I thought about, like, we had beach day at my school, and I thought about beach day for months in advance. Like, aww. I was like, okay, beach day comes in like 2 months. I've got to start working out. I've got to get like my training on.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. And I'd be looking for your training the perfect sarong. I'd be like, okay, what am I going to wear sarong? On beach day?
Oh my God. Growing up in LA was so unique.
I literally sewed myself something one beach day.
Wait, that, like, where are you from? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in New York and then LA. So kind of both coasts. What about you?
Right. I was Ohio. So.
Oh, wow.
We had a couple of nice months in the middle of the year. And then otherwise it was just miserable cold.
Yeah.
So it didn't even matter. It was like, I remember even as a kid thinking like, I don't need to, you know, lose weight or feel comfortable in my body because I'll just throw on this big puffy jacket, a starter or those starter jackets with the big ass pocket.
Yep.
I would wear like men's shirts and try to go for that like 90s, like baggy, like whatever. I don't care. In reality, I'm just like, does it cover my thighs? It's like, no, I couldn't care more. I wanted to ask, what made you decide to start your podcast, Everything Iconic?
You know, I had been performing and doing stuff around town. I had some career setbacks and some mental health stuff going on. I kind of fell into this deep depression. And I remember saying, like, I'm never going to get on stage again. I was like, I was doing improv and sketch comedy at the time. And I just sort of had a mental break. And I was like, I'm not going to do it again. I'm just going to focus on writing. And then as I sort of came out of that, a friend was like, you know, you should start a podcast because you can really perform from your living room or your bedroom or whatever. You don't have to even leave the house. And so that was appealing to me. And so that was really kind of like where the idea started. And I never thought anyone would even give a shit or listen. And then it sort of snowballed from there. And I think it was just the fear of getting on an actual stage. And then
also, I can only imagine the exhaustion. Like, performing is so exhausting. I did the improv scene for a few years in New York, and it's a little, it takes a lot out of you, and it's humbling.
Oh, yeah. There'd be more people on stage than in the audience oftentimes, you know? It's like why are there 10 of us on stage and 3 people in the audience?
The short period I did stand up, I'd be performing in, like, a bar that had 3 people in it. And I'd be like, I mean, it didn't go well, but it also couldn't have gone well. You know what I mean?
I did this stand-up show. Like, it was on a lineup called She's Funny with a Z. And it was all lesbian comedians. And I'm a gay man. And I support and love the lesbian community. but it was a lineup of literally 15 lesbian comedians and then me. Like, so I don't even know why they put me on it. It was like a mistake, I think, or something. And so by the time I was like literally the last to go. So like the entire audience had just seen 15 comedians. So by that time, literally anyone's dead. Like no one wants to see any comedy after 15 people. Not to mention the fact that it was just, they were like, what's this man doing on the show? It's supposed to be an all female lineup.
Did he storm the stage? Yeah.
Then I come on and I'm like ready for my She's Funny 5 minute set. And so I just remember people in the audience with like their arms crossed, like so pissed, not interested in hearing any of my stupid dick jokes.
I am picturing when Luann this season on Real Housewives of New York put on a charity stand-up comedy thing. And it was like all these real comedians and then her ex-boyfriend Jacques, who's like a middle-aged
Oh my God. What was that about, Devin? Like what was going on? Like why was Jacques doing a stand-up routine? Like that was so bizarre.
My mom like has PTSD from, she like worked at stand-up bars in Boston when she was young. So she kind of was having a PTSD moment where she was like, oh no, no, they're doing comedy. No, okay, no, this is so awkward. No.
I was
like, why is this happening?
Also, yeah. By the way, I feel like we as a Bravo community of watchers, we move past stuff like that so quickly, like which is disgusting. It's like when you really think about it, it's like so screwed up the fact that we all were like, oh yeah, Jox is performing stand-up comedy at this charity event for bullying or something. And it was like, we all talked about it for like maybe 10 seconds and then we were on to the next thing. But it's like, that's crazy.
It was so crazy. And also the fact that they were all talking through the performances, like all the women were just loudly and were just like, oh, we love them. Next thing. Okay.
Sonia was just in the audience yelling like, you did fuck the pirate. Which, again, another crazy thing that we move past so quickly because we're so conditioned watching this crazy television that it's like, oh, yeah, one of the cast members cheated on her fiance with a pirate.
Yes.
While
who looked like Johnny Depp. Yes.
And when you really sit down, like I take notes when I watch these episodes and sometimes I look at the notes. I'm like, what the fuck was that? Like, what was going on there? Like, how did this happen? How is this television entertainment? Like,
right.
It's all so bizarre. And that's why I think we all like love it so much because it's just, it's a cartoon at a certain point.
1,000%.
It totally is.
And who was the first Bravo celebrity you were able to interview on your podcast? And what was that experience like?
Oh, Margaret from New Jersey. She was the very first one. And I'm always so grateful to her because no one was coming on my show at that point. And it was her first season on Housewives. And she... yeah, came on and she was lovely. And then she was, I also got to have her on I did a live show at the BravoCon last year and she was one of the guests. And so I'm just grateful to her for being so willing to do that.
I love her and am a huge fan of hers. I feel like she really brought the Jersey franchise back to life in a way that it needed to be brought back to life because it kind of was like the same kind of sad storylines for a long time. Like some really dark family drama, ICE deportation. So not that that's funny, but it just was like, we need a little more.
We need something else.
Yeah.
And more balance. She's more balanced too. Like they had trouble finding someone to join that cast because it's so Teresa heavy. And so Teresa's family heavy. And so I think Margaret did a great job. Also, which really surprised me because at BravoCon, I wasn't feeling well. And she just kept like checking in on me and seeing how I was feeling.
Cute.
Like really going out of her way and being like, do you need anything? Like, and I just always remember that too, because, you know, not everyone's like that. So
going off of that, I wanted to ask you about that experience of like blending the worlds kind of, because I feel like what you do such a good job of and the reason why more Bravo celebrities and Netflix celebrities and regular celebrities are coming on your show is because I feel like it's so clear that you love these characters so much. And like, even though we talk about the caricatures and the drama and how crazy it is, we all really love them. And we all like I have the experience a lot of, if I am talking about it with my mom, that's one thing. And we can say, you know, that we think Lisa Rinna's annoying. But then if an outsider says that, we kind of defend her. Like, right. She's a sibling, kind of. Like, we're like, okay, wait, no. She actually works really hard.
Yeah.
She's a hustler, okay? She hustles. And she's the first one to be open about that.
She's, I got big lips and iconic hair or whatever she said.
Yeah.
Lisa Rinna. I just love how she's always like, you guys, let's be open, okay? We've got to open up.
Own it, yeah.
Own it. I had this moment with Candy Burris, actually. Like, there was a season where I didn't really, like, love her on the show on Atlanta Housewives. And then she was doing Celebrity Big Brother. And I was, like, sitting down to watch Celebrity Big Brother. And my boyfriend's like, what are you watching this for? I was like, Candy's on it. And he's like, I thought you didn't like Candy. I was like, how dare you? I was like, I will support all of her ventures. He's like, yeah. Well, you were just telling me how you think she needs to leave the show. And I was like, I never said that. I just denied it. But now now she's like my favorite. Me. Yeah. Now she's my favorite again. But yeah.
It's hard because you're like, okay, you don't know what this person has been through since season one. So don't even try to go there.
We have to throw to an ad break very quickly and we'll be right back with Danny Pellegrino. I want true romance. And we're back with Danny Pellegrino on True Romance, and we're discussing the beautiful universe. I don't even want to say world. I'll say the Bravo universe.
The cinematic universe of the Bravo Housewives.
Just like the Marvel universe and the DC universe, we have the Bravo universe.
It is. I love these women, though. And Devin, you were talking about, like, kind of the mix of we hate them 1 minute and then we like them the next. And
yes.
And I do, on my podcast, I always try to come at it from a positive perspective. And I think we can all be like shady and have fun. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, like, I love these shows and I love watching them and I want to celebrate them. And so I also always try to play by the rule of I'm much harder on the men than the women, because I feel like women in any industry, but particularly in the entertainment industry, it's like the standards that they have to live by are just insane standards. And so, like, I don't feel bad if I'm talking about the way one of the men on the show looks or something like that. But I do try to, when it comes to the women, it's like, I want to celebrate the women on the show. And it is a great franchise for showing us, like, vibrant women who are working and sexual and all of these things that we have trouble even seeing on scripted TV.
1,000%
So I think it's good to celebrate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Devin was just talking to me about Real Housewives of New York. And I mean, you can speak more to it, Devin, but how amazing it is to see just single older women now who are open about going through menopause and who are just like living their lives. And I do think that adds to this feeling of comfort when you're watching it, that you know these women.
Yeah. Yeah. I think on Bitch Sesh, they talk about it a lot. Casey and Danielle, the hosts, who are also like writers and performers, talk about how there really aren't roles for women like that, like in TV and movies, like such a complicated. I mean, you couldn't write a Luann because it just would be like on every step of the way, like, this is actually insane and wouldn't be a real person, but it is. But
or you'd be like, this is too good. Like, this is like, this was too nuanced.
Right.
Too nuanced. Yeah.
Like, yeah. So I think,
who's the girl who writes a pop song with her daughter and then performs it?
Crazy.
Wait. Oh my God. I forgot that she performed that song with her daughter.
Girl Code. It was called Girl Code. And look, another instance where we all just accepted it as something that happens in this world that we're all in.
It just went into my brain and became normal, and I forgot about it until now. Yeah.
Do you remember when Danielle Staub from New Jersey did like a lesbian ballad on the late night talk show? And it's like, what other late night talk show is having this woman, this woman do a very sensual ballad with her then partner
on
the piano, and who, by the way, was not a singer.
Right.
Just happened. You're not going to see that on Jimmy Kimmel.
No, and you're not going to see that literally anywhere. And you're not going to see, like this a trip of women who are 80% in menopause going to Cancun and getting fucked up and looking for, prowling for men on the beach. Like, you're just not going to see that in TV.
Yeah, but it's very rare. It's rare. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, speaking of, like, I'm definitely much harder on the men, and I completely agree. And we wanted to talk to you about Bethany Ever After.
Oh, yes, which, we do.
I could talk about this for days. Get sit comfortable. Sit tight.
I'm so excited by your, like, celebration of it, because I rewatched it last year. And the reason I rewatched it was because my coworker, Adrian, she rewatched it, and she said, like, she wasn't sure. She said she felt like Jason's insanity didn't really show through. So I kind of was like, okay, I'm going to have to take a look at this myself. And I kind of had the opposite experience, but I'm so happy that you're bringing it back to the forefront.
Well, I feel like it's important because this is not a popular thing, but I was really team Carol when it came down to team Bethany and Carol. And that got me a lot of heat, but at the same time, I love Bethany. Like I think I worship her, and I think she's one of the greatest reality stars of our time. And when it came to Bethany's show, it's so interesting to watch, because first of all, you see the whole dissolution of a marriage, like start to the end. By that last episode, they despise each other with every ounce of their being. And there's like moments throughout the middle of it where you really see it come through. There's things with the parents that come through, and the way they come from different worlds. And Bethany had said, I don't remember if this was even on the show or if this was in press, but I remember her, I'm like closing my eyes to concentrate here. I'm just,
let me go back.
Know, you're really channeling the history.
I know. I was like, wait, I got to concentrate. Let me close my eyes. What was I saying? No, I lost my train of thought.
You remember seeing her in press or in...
Yeah, she said that she would always look like the bad guy because this wasn't the life that Jason signed up for. And when you really look at the show through that lens, you could see that, like, they're trying to make him come across as this perfect guy.
Yes.
And then the moments where he's not come through, and I think we could see the kind of person that he was when the cameras were off. And in that very last season, there are so many times where Bethany says, like, I'm the bad guy all the time. And what she's saying is, like, I'm the bad guy to the public, and the cameras roll and you're turning into this gem. But as soon as they go off, you're being this asshole to me when they're off.
Right.
And so I think that you could see that coming through.
It was so heartbreaking every time she said something like that, when she was like, I'm a good person, I'm getting blamed for this. And it was very Jessica Simpson with Nick Lachey, when Jessica's like, I'm a good person. And
yeah.
And I think that.
By the way, same producers on Newlyweds.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Newlyweds.
That's a great fact.
I thought it was so, when they have that conversation on vacation, when Jason is basically being like, I'm 40 years old and I don't know what I'm doing and I feel insecure. And he's blaming her for it. And she was like, well, I don't think I'm responsible for that. And he's like, well, I've never felt this way before. And it was I was like, oh, so many straight men project all of their insecurities onto the woman they're with.
Yes.
Especially since she was so successful. And when they're like redecorating their house and how he like yells at the designers being like, this is unacceptable. And you're just like, wait, who do you think you are? Like,
yeah.
It is so crazy.
There's lots of good business stuff there too. And you also see someone come from very little. Like, we've gotten to see Bethany's whole arc. And by the end of that show, she's uber successful. And I think there's very few programs in like the history of TV where we've been able to literally follow someone's journey from like a one bedroom apartment or whatever it was that she lived in early New York to the end of that series where she's, you know, seemingly has it all. But then, as a viewer, we're looking at it and being like, well, you don't really have it all because this man is a monster.
Yes.
You know, the money didn't make you guys happy. And so there's all these things to that series that I think are so fascinating.
Yeah, I remember the scene where she just found out she got the talk show and they just did this big reveal in the finale, the series finale. They just did this big reveal where they went into the new apartment for the first time. And they showed this huge, beautiful place, and she designed it, and they're kind of in awe. And then the next morning, they have this scene where one of the producers from her talk show calls, and she kind of crumples onto the floor and, like, just stares vacantly. And I thought that was so heartbreaking because it did feel like there was so much strife in their home, a lot that we probably weren't seeing, but it was interesting to rewatch it because the first time I watched it, I didn't have a lot of relationship experience, like, at all. So I remember thinking, like, he is, like, a really nice guy. Like, she is, like, she's difficult. And I also remember thinking, like, am I like that? Am I too difficult? Like, he doesn't like that. I should take note of that. Like whatever. I was just really immature at the time. And then when I rewatched it, I had a completely, starkly different experience where I was like, this guy is Burger from Sex and the City. He is insecure. His ego, as you said on your podcast, like, the male ego is so, so fragile. I thought that was really interesting, especially the gender thing of, like, he called her damaged at one point and, like, difficult.
He's so mean to her.
Yeah, I'd be so fascinated. I really feel like Bethany Ever After is almost a sister series to Newlyweds with Nick and Jessica. And it just came, I think, like 10 years after Newlyweds had ended. Mm-hmm. But at the time, that was like, I don't remember what year Bethany Ever After was. But, you know, I think views were changing even at that time in terms of, like, the male-female dynamic. And so now where we're at, looking back on that show, we're seeing it a little more clearly, if that makes sense, than maybe we did when we watched it back then. Because I thought the same thing. I remember watching them when it first came out thinking, oh, these two love each other. That's like a good, real relationship. And now I just see, like, all the kind of a mental manipulation that was going on. And both sides, too, by the way. Like, I don't think she's perfect, of course, but mostly from his side. He was manipulating, you know?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And speaking of men, we had to ask, I just finished Beverly Hills season 11.
Oh, God.
What do you think of Denise Richards' husband, Big Dick Aaron?
Wow, Big Dick Aaron is a character for the ages. I mean,
yes,
I don't like...
truly.
I do stand firmly on Team Denise, but I do have trouble with the Big Dick Aaron of it all, because
it's really
he's
hard.
There's like a weird energy to him. I don't understand him. He's someone, I feel like I'm a good judge of character, right? When I'm watching these shows, and he's someone who, one of the few people who I look at, I'm like, I don't understand the way his mind is working. And that makes me uneasy. And so I don't know what's going on up there. So that makes me feel uncomfortable, but I do love Denise, and I hope that I just want only good things for her. I just love her.
Me too. Me too. It's so funny. I was texting Devin about it because I was like, I literally just prayed for Denise Richards because I'm so worried about her and I really don't think this relationship is good. And I had the same thing where I'm like, immediately from the start, I was like, no, not this guy, not this guy. And I told Devin later, I was like, okay, he's like, has a cancer scam. Like, he is scamming people and saying that he can, like, heal cancer with energy tools or whatever. And Devin was like, okay, the scary thing is this is like the third cancer scam on the, like, Real Housewives world.
You are so right. Oh my God, I didn't even think of that. But yes,
it's the third cancer scam and the second cancer scam that was, like, brought into the world by a shady boyfriend of one of the housewives, which is stunning.
There's something going on there that I don't even think we'll know unless, hopefully, Denise comes back for another season. I feel like we'll understand more, but I don't know if she will. I don't know.
I think they'll get divorced. I think they'll get divorced. I think it's going to, he's too erratic. The night that he's at the dinner party and he's talking about how, like, something about splitting atoms and how he's like, forget everything you know about cancer. It's all wrong. And then,
by the way, that whole dinner, I just loved everyone's faces. They were like, what the fuck is going on? Like,
I know. You could really feel like, imagine yourself there. Like, the one person at the dinner party who says, like, the slightly off thing, and then everyone just can't get back to being present and eating because it's like, wait, what did he just say about 5G or whatever?
Mauricio was so stoned.
I know.
Oh my God, Mauricio is always stoned. He's my favorite husband, though, obviously. Do you believe Brandy that her and Denise hooked up?
Yes, I do believe Brandy. I don't like the way it was handled all around, like, even from a production standpoint. Like, I was very frustrated because in my eyes, it felt like most of the cast, they didn't want to get in the mix, as the cast of Beverly Hills never wants to get in the mix.
Yes.
And so they always focus on one thing so that they have their storyline for the season and they can all just kind of skate on by and only one person has to be, like, the central focus. And so that's frustrating to me that they made the central focus that. And I do understand, like, Brandy wanting to get back on this TV show, right? Because she hasn't done She's a single mother. She hasn't done a reality TV show in a little while. She's done basically all there is to do. How many other reality mm-hmm. TV shows are there for her to do? Mm-hmm. So I don't think, like, work-wise, yes, she could go get, like, a 9-to-5 job. But this is the career that she's in now, whether, you know, she's found herself in this career for 10 years. So I don't know where else she'd go in terms of the reality TV landscape. So I'm thinking she must realize that and think, I have to get back on the show. I need a good paycheck. She did see an in, and I felt like the producers, the cast, they all took that little nugget. And I think they took advantage of both Denise and Brandy. I think they were both, I think they were both kind of like the collateral damage on that. And Denise too, like the real moment of clarity that I had was when they were on their trip and they were all yelling at Denise about the Brandy situation. And Denise was, tears in her eyes, and she said, no, it didn't happen. And it reminded me, like, there was this time when I was 19, and I told this story on my podcast. Like, I had some people saw me hooking up with a guy, and they had, like, confronted us about it at, like, a group breakfast. And I remember I was like, no, that didn't happen, because I wasn't even out to anyone at that time. Right. And I was so I was so ashamed. I wasn't even out to myself at that time, let alone mm-hmm. anyone else. Like, I wouldn't even admit it to myself that I was gay. And so that's what I saw in Denise's eyes. And when it happened to me, I remember my best friend he moved along the conversation, and we dropped it really quick. But with the housewives, it was like, they just kept on, like, trying to drag it out.
Yeah.
And if they were real friends, they would have, like, tried to sidestep it. They would have been like, let's talk about it this another time. Maybe she'll feel more comfortable about another time. They should have told her in advance. I know we're on a reality show, and the whole point is to make, you know, a spectacle and everything like that. But that just bothered me, because I just felt like I understood the feeling that she was feeling, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Being suddenly exposed and having such a private part of your life open, I totally agree. And I definitely saw the fear, and I almost felt the panic of her scrambling. And to the point where when she was like, you know what? No, Brandy told me she had sex with one of you. And I was like, Denise, don't do it. Like, just pedal back. But.
And we all wanted her to just say, stop it. Like, enough. Right. We wanted her to say, who the fuck cares? Move on.
Right.
But she was uncomfortable, because she didn't. She was totally blindsided by that. And so I felt bad.
Was shocked that, not, as you're saying, like, they're clearly not real friends. I was shocked that not a single person besides Garcelle, who clearly was, you know, came in as her friend and stayed her friend. But I was shocked that not a single one of them stepped in and said, this is getting into a territory where it's kind of upsetting and we should stop, like, do what Sonia did on Scary Island and say, like, okay, we actually have to stop this now because it's getting into something.
She's
that
not well. Yeah.
It shouldn't be. And, you know, I have many problems with Teddy, but if your whole brand is accountability, life coach, like, all in, show up for your life, do the right thing, how are you stoking this fire of gossip about something that could be really harmful to someone's life and not step in and say, like, wait, why are we all talking about this? This is weird, actually. Like, why at my baby shower are we talking about whether these two women had sex?
I thought Teddy could have gone to that dinner, and she could have been relentless about the things that she heard Denise said about them. I would have understood that. It was the sex part of it where I'm like, you know, Teddy, that's something just very so personal. It literally was outing someone. And it was like,
yes,
if you are going to bring it up on camera, if you are going to bring that up for the TV show, at least, like, do it separately, not in front of the whole group dinner. And I, maybe that's sounding hypocritical of me, because ordinarily I'm always like, you know, they need to talk about this stuff. They're on a reality show. But that just felt too personal to me.
That it also feeds the narrative that, like, lesbian or gay sex is shocking inherently. Do you know what I mean? Like, when everyone was like, oh, what? And it was like, wait, yes, like, it's crazy that two friends hooked up that you didn't know about. But being, like, these girls that are, like, clutching your pearls talking about it feeds the narrative of, like, oh, my God. My favorite reaction is Erica Jane, who's just, like,
she never has
completely deadpan.
The other thing I just want to mention too, though, with, like, Brandy, it pisses me off too, because it's like, she was the whole storyline and she didn't get paid as a main cast member at all.
Right, that's true.
And it's like, they used her, as they have in the past, to, like, to spark a storyline. And it's like, the main cast members should be the main storyline. Like, they're getting paid as main cast. Brandy's certainly getting paid for the show, but yeah, she's right. not getting paid. There's main cast members, there's full or part-time cast members, and then there's people who come in for an episode or two, which is what Brandy did. And so,
right,
you know, it frustrates me that she became the storyline for the season and then they weren't even going to pay her.
I really want to see footage of her and Kim hanging out. Like, that's a show that unto itself.
Well, that's the thing is that I was going to say the show has not been the same since Kim and Brandy left the show. Like, that's when it was entertaining. And as soon as they left, it kind of became like, okay, these ladies are really rich and that's entertaining. And some of their lives are interesting, but I'm not like waiting on bated breath every week like I am for a Potomac or an Atlanta or a New York or a Dallas, although kind of RIP because it took such a terrible racist turn. But I actually have to ask you one question that my mom asked me to ask you, so I have to ask it. But she wanted to know what you thought about how weird it is that Kim from Beverly Hills was treated like her alcoholism was such a focus and such a like, can you believe her behavior? And everyone's obsessing about it, talking about it. Whereas we feel like if she was on New York, it would just be like, this is how they act. They are all like this. So we thought it was interesting and wanted to know what you thought about that, the way her alcoholism was treated.
I mean, that's so interesting. I never thought about it, but you know, I never thought of it like that. It's intriguing. I think New York in general, they handle things in just a completely different way. And it goes back to sort of what we were saying about Beverly Hills, where they focus on one thing. It almost becomes like easier for the women to hide their own truths by just attacking whoever's nearest to them about mm-hmm. their thing.
Yeah.
And so it's like for a while, it was all about Kim's alcoholism. And that was just a way that we didn't have to talk about everyone else's shit going on. And it is gross. And even Kim's sobriety issues were used as a storyline even after she was gone as well.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just a little weird. I think like make the storylines about the main cast. I don't know. I keep going back to that.
No, I totally
agree. No, I completely agree. What partnerships do you admire on the Bravo shows?
Oh, like in terms of relationships, right? Like
Yes.
Yeah, you know, do you guys watch Potomac?
Yes, but I'm not caught up. I've only watched one episode of the new season.
It's really amazing. I love Potomac, but I am so fascinated by Karen and Ray's dynamic. They're kind of going through some troubles right now. And I'm like, I'm on the edge of my seat seeing what happens. I'm not saying they're good or bad, but I'm hopeful that they'll get through this rocky time. Because
it's
like, yeah,
we love all these people, right? I'm trying to think of like, okay, so let's go through some of the New York women, most of them are single right now.
Mm-hmm, I think they're
all single right now, actually.
Yeah.
Except for Tinsley. I'm very happy for Tinsley, actually, about getting out of the mix. Like, I don't know how good Scott is for her, but I do feel great that she has just moved on. She seems confident in her decision to move to Chicago, start this life with this man. And I feel good about it, especially because she didn't need that. Like, she didn't need to be hounded by Dorinda for a whole season.
I know.
So I'm happy for her. And then what other franchise? New Jersey. I do think Teresa's maybe dating someone new, and I'm hopeful that she's just finding a hot new man. Like, that's what I want for Teresa.
Totally.
I just want her to be with like a hot pool guy or something.
It was so interesting last season on Jersey, the conversation about like traditional Italian relationships and how Teresa was kind of like fed up with Joe's misogynist behavior. No offense to Joe, but a lot of the women were talking about that. Dolores too, about like how they're kind of expected to be in the kitchen and doing everything and like getting talked to in a way that's not always respectful. I thought that was interesting that they were all kind of like having a like waking up to the patriarchy moment.
And I think
they've been radicalized.
Yeah.
They're still slowly being, it's very slow on New Jersey, the radicalization. Like I think that's a very interesting point. Like it's happening, but it's even at the end of last season, we were just sort of seeing those ideas come into Dolores and Teresa's head. And I hope to keep seeing more of it. I mean, that happens on all of the franchises, but it's like New Jersey, it just happens slowly. But talk about also an arc of a woman, like just seeing Teresa from the beginning, like there hasn't in scripted TV, there's not an arc like that.
Nothing it's like crazy. Like that. Yeah. I actually saw Teresa one time at Mohegan Sun. She was doing a reading and I looked down at her from a balcony because that's as close as I could get. And she looked beautiful. Anyway, so what are of your least favorite partnerships and relationships on the Bravo franchises that you think are toxic or were toxic if they're no longer a thing?
You know, Shane and Emily on Orange County, I don't like that whole dynamic. Like, dark. He's an asshole.
Yes. Right. So dark. Terrifying.
It's so weird. Yeah. It's, and she's someone who I would like to see get radicalized more. You know, like I would like to,
yeah.
I don't know. I think we'll see that maybe at some point. And then on Potomac, I don't like Ashley and Michael. This most recent week on Potomac, Michael, who's been in like scandal after scandal, and she just had his baby.
Yes.
And
literally
he talks to her horrifically. And I'm thinking, like, you've put this woman through so much. First of all, she stood by your side through like you doing the most horrific things.
Yes.
And she had your baby and she's taking care of the baby and you're still speaking to her that way. Like, it just made, I was like livid. I forget even what he said. Oh, they were going on like a cast trip and he's like, don't forget the baby. Like, you need to be with the baby. And he was like guilting her, saying like she could not leave to go on a girl's trip without the baby because, you know, she has a responsibility. And she was like, yeah, I'm taking it. But he just kept hounding her.
Yeah.
And I was just like, really, dude, like the way, after what you've done with her,
yes,
it just disgusted me. So I'd say those like stick out to me as like just being really horrific.
Yeah.
To jump back to good relationships, I have to give a shout out to Tom and Erica Jane. Erica Jane's 80-year-old husband, who
love.
I didn't know was the like Albert Finney's character in Aaron Brockovich. Like, he was the lawyer who sued those huge oil companies.
Mm-hmm.
But I truly believe he has like healed her because she had a dark past and she does love him so much. And I love that he stays out of the fray. Like, he's literally just there for Erica.
Right.
And that she seems to just care about him so much. Like, when Dory and PK, who have, that's a whole other issue where I think that there's like a dark scam going on. I have a theory that they're just borrowing money from different people and she spends so much money on outfits and parties to make it look like their finances are okay. But when PK like is basically trying to become friends again with LVP, and Dory and LVP is like, I'm not going to be friends with your wife. And Erica Jane's like, if someone like had a problem with Tom, then they would have a problem with me and I would show up at their house. And I was like, that's the kind of loyalty like I'm looking for in this life. Yeah.
Right. You know, I also think Harry Hamlin's very loyal to Lisa Rinna. Like, he just like she does a lot. Like, she always does a lot. And he just
that is exactly what you can say about Lisa Rinna.
She does a lot. And admittedly, I think she would say that. And he just loves and supports the person that she is. And that's interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. 1,000%.
I think Ken and Lisa also have that where, like, it seems like even if she clearly is doing something wrong or she gets caught in like a thing where she did, I don't want to say wrong, but like when she gets caught in a lie or something, Ken will defend her no matter what with like blind loyalty. And scream at Kyle and run away from her. Which
goodbye, Kyle.
Yeah, goodbye, Kyle. Which I kind of, I mean, I hope that my boyfriend Matt would do that for me.
You always want your significant other to like defend you to the death, and until you get behind closed doors, and then be like, you know,
that was fucked up.
Yeah, right. Like, why did you do that?
Speaking of which, does your boyfriend watch Bravo with you?
You know, not really. He's gotten into Below Deck with me, and so we'll watch that together. Oh, and we are binging Top Chef during this whole pandemic.
Okay.
We started like from early seasons of Top Chef, and we watch that together. But he doesn't watch Housewives. He doesn't watch any of that stuff. But we love Top Chef right now.
It's funny because my brother used to watch Top Chef when we were younger, and I remember always thinking how crazy it was that we were both watching something on the same network and could not, just like two different islands in an ocean. There was nothing from his that I could relate to or understand, and there was nothing from mine that he could relate to and understand.
I had always heard it was a good show, but I just never watched it. And then finally during this pandemic, we started with season 4, and we've just been like going through the seasons at like a disgusting pace, like just so fast. We're like finishing the seasons in like 2 days.
Yeah.
When you stop watching TV and you're like seasick from like just being in the real world without a screen.
And let me tell you something. There's a million spinoffs of that show. It's like we're trying to decide which spinoffs we should be watching and trying to fit those seasons in between seasons of the main one. I mean, it's a very confusing journey because there's like a master's version, a kid's version, Just Desserts. There's like a whole thing.
Just Desserts.
Just Desserts was my fave. There's only two seasons of Just Desserts. But yeah, it's like, where does this all fit in? And then it's like a fucking puzzle because you're like, well, they'll have contestants from one as judges in another. So you can't like jump ahead too much or else it'll be spoiled.
Yeah.
But he likes that. He doesn't like the Housewives or the... He used to watch Vanderpump Rules and then he fell off like so many.
Yeah, I think Vanderpump Rules is a good couple show, but mainly because it makes you feel so much better about the couple you're in because you're like, well, we're not pouring drinks on each other's heads and we're not cheating on each other in an old lady's house while she's there.
Right. He also watches all those TLC shows, though. Like, so he like likes the trash TV, but for some reason, I don't know what it is. Maybe because I'm talking about Bravo all day, he's like not interested. But he'll sit and watch like 4 hours of that Darcy and whatever.
Oh, Darcy and Stacey.
Yeah, I watch a little bit of that.
So will I.
Yeah. I'll go in his office or his the living room when he's watching it, and I'm just like, I'll get caught up in that. Like there was just this past week, Darcy I think was on the phone in the bathtub and. It just looked like she was about to drop the phone in the tub. And I just kept imagining her. I know the iPhones are waterproof, but I just kept imagining like her getting electrocuted, trying to look sexy in that tub.
Yeah, I know. She is an icon that we did not deserve. And she actually grew up close to me in Connecticut, which is stunning.
Oh my God. I interviewed her twice and both times were very wild.
Yeah, It's hard with the TLC characters. It's actually slightly more challenging to continue loving and defending what they do, I think.
Right.
But I do love them. But yeah, I have been obsessed with Married at First Sight recently, which is a whole new ball game. But the other night I was going to turn it on and my boyfriend Matt said, I just like don't really want to watch people's sad lives right now. And I was like, okay, no, they're not sad, they just got married, and no, they're strangers, but they're getting to know each other. Okay.
But do you have a dating show that you like, that's like your preferred dating show?
I liked Love is Blind a lot. I thought that was good. I think that's coming back soon. You know, I'm very interested in the Netflix reality shows because I feel like they haven't quite found their footing, but some of their stuff is really good. I am interested in it. Love is Blind moved at such a rapid pace, which I found so fascinating because if that show had aired on Bravo or TLC, the relationships would have been spread out over 3 or 4 seasons. But like Netflix somehow edited their relationships down to 8 episodes or something. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, I was watching and like, what is this show? Like I was so like... amazed by it because I just thought it was so different. So yeah, I'd say that's the first thing that's coming to mind. I'm sure I watched some others.
I loved Vanessa Lachey's emotional hosting. Like she was so committed. You saw her be like, okay, I got a fucking gig. Like I'm going to give it all I got.
I
swear,
that.
I thought they were added in post because those two were just, it made no sense. They were barely in it. They just sort of pop in. And I was like literally watching episodes being like, is she in the same scene as those other people? Like, I feel like they added them.
Different outfits, different everything. Yeah, I think also that Nick Lachey buys his Twitter followers because my boyfriend is well-versed in Twitter and he found some interesting evidence as to that. But not that that matters. I'm just...
I believe it.
I'm anti-him.
It matters. It matters to me.
I can't even tell you how much your social media presence means to us.
So much.
Oh, thank
and
you.
To those
so
you
much
love.
Archived. All my archive page is just your memes over and over.
The funny thing is too, you know how you always like now with the language of Instagram, you always DM like whatever you think is funny. But when it's your post, I already know everyone I love has seen it and liked it already that I can't even send it. I'm like, okay, my sister already liked this. Devin already liked this. Like, and your use of the Nanny theme song over different celebrities dancing, notably my favorite is Scarlett Johansson dancing from the Marriage Story to the Nanny theme song, is one of my favorite clips of all time. mainly because I don't know if you are, but I'm a deep, like, I love Fran Drescher so much. The Nanny, I truly believe, not ironically, is a great TV show.
100%.
I remember when I started rewatching in college and I was like, wait, this is so well written. She is a star. She makes it look effortless.
Her and stunning outfits, fashions. Yeah, oh the my fashion. God. Yeah.
She's dressed like a Barbie, like a Mattel Barbie, like from the 80s. It's
also
it's brilliant.
That theme song literally goes with anything. And it's just, I think, the best theme song of our time. Like, it's just a beautiful, like, it makes me instantly happy hearing that.
Aww.
Well, you also had it with Renee Zellweger dancing after she won the Oscar. And the funny thing is that that Oscar speech is one of the worst Oscar speeches of all time. And like, she was out to lunch, like she was in outer space. And so when she's dancing to that song, I'm like, this easily could be reality for how insane she was. Yeah. Like, I can totally see her doing that.
She thanked everyone. She's like, Venus, Serena Williams, Frida Kahlo, Mr. Rogers. It was like, she was just naming every fucking celebrity that came to her mind. I was like, what do you just, I felt like she was on an IMDb and she was just reading like the names.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it was wild. But I love that movie, by the way. Oh my God, I was obsessed with Judy, that movie.
Oh my God, that's interesting. I found it very boring.
How dare you? How dare you, by the way?
I have to say, and don't get me wrong, I love Judy Garland. I think her history is fascinating. I would watch a movie about her as a child, because I think that's really interesting. And if you watch old Judy Garland movies, her pupils are like dinner plates. Like, she is on something the entire time. She is so, like, rigidly high.
I love the dramatics just of Renee Zellweger's performance. Like, she always had a cigarette in the hand, taking pills. Like, it was just such a wonderfully campy thing.
It's true. Yeah.
We wanted to ask if it was okay for us to read one of your Jessica Thursday, hashtag Jessica Thursday posts dramatically aloud on our pod, because it's something that we exchange with each other every week and look forward to so much.
Well, I'm not going to leave. Certainly, I have to see this.
This is a dramatic Instagram reading from Danny Pellegrino's account on his weekly Jessica Thursday. Happy hashtag Jessica Thursday. A few weeks ago, I spotlighted a photo shoot for Crown Queen Jess's Dessert cosmetic line. What I didn't show you was the lead up. In this dimly lit cinema verite style scene from season 2 of MTV's Newlyweds 2004, Papa Joe Simpson booked a respected photographer to showcase the goods, but Jessica had a problem with him. According to Miss Simpson, she, in quotes, couldn't be sexy for her line of now defunct cupcake-flavored lotions in front of a man missing a finger. Queen Tina seemingly sided with her daughter, while then-husband Nick did his best to stick up for the thumbless photographer. Unfortunately, Jessica had made up her mind. Papa Joe, meanwhile, appeared disgusted with everyone in the scene and would later become a photographer himself, shooting shirtless young men for Instagram as well as hashtag pump rules cast members, all the while utilizing both of his thumbs. Jessica and Nick filed for divorce the following year.
So
there's so many levels. There's so many
There was a lot going on in that one. I'm like, was I stoned when I wrote that one?
No, it's so brilliant.
It's so important. Everything you listed was so vital to remember and to never forget.
Oh, you have some traditions with the Jessica post. One is that you bleep out Nick Lachey's name with stars as if it's a swear word.
Love.
The other is, we've actually referenced in this podcast before, you call him Joe Takes Pictures of Men Now Simpson.
He does.
And then he does.
It's true.
I follow him on Instagram. That's all he's posting.
It's a lot. God. It's a lot. What does he say? He said in that one clip when he's like, for girls, it's like the tits. And for guys, it's like the big, put your big dick out.
Yeah, he was telling like the guys that he was photographing, they're like, put their dick out.
Yeah. It's hard, though. You have
normal
to,
photography
I mean,
stuff.
I feel for him in that he's like finally embracing his sexuality out of years of like internal shame and projecting shame. And he's probably just like gasping for air.
You know, so you're referencing a scene where he appeared on Vanderpump Rules. And I've tried to get Tom to like get him on the show again. I keep telling him, I'm like, just have him come on for a scene, like photograph you and Tom again. Like, we need it.
Yes. Right. That was so stunning when those worlds collided. Like, I was just watching an episode of Vanderpump thinking, this is a Tom and Tom scene. It's probably going to be like very fun, but not necessarily drama, just kind of a filler, fun, charming. And then I just, my world, the walls of my house collapsed into dust around me.
Well, they all, there's this weird circle of reality TV where it's like, yes. Even we talked about Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. It's like Mauricio was on Newlyweds at one point.
And really? He was?
Yeah. He was like Nick's real, he was their realtor. And he was, he went on vacation with like Nick and the gang, like in an episode. And then even Tom Sandoval was on The Hills back in the day. So yeah. There's this... It's a weird pool of people. I don't know. It's very fascinating to me that like everyone seems to appear. Or I mentioned like the producer of Newlyweds, like the executive producer of that was the EP of Bethany Ever After, and Roni. He produced Roni, like Scary Island, those early seasons.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Scary Island was really my introduction to the Bravo world, and it's one of the best episodes of television I've ever seen.
So good. Perfect.
Perfect.
Mainly because of when the tote bags are delivered. And she's just like, no, no, no.
With that black hair. Bethany with that black hair.
It's so good. It's so good. I mean, they've given us so much. I appreciate that dramatic reading, though. That was delightful.
Oh, we appreciate your content so much. So
you are an amazing writer, an amazing performer. You give us so much light in these dark times. And I truly do mean that.
Yes. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Do you want to plug anything before we...
Yeah, everyone can listen to my podcast, Everything Iconic, on Spotify, iTunes, all over the place. And then on social media, I'm at Danny Pellegrino on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want a good cocktail book, pick up Fancy AF Cocktails. There's like over 80 drink recipes in there. I wrote it with two of the people from Vanderpump Rules, and there's like lots of good drinks in there. And we're all stuck at home, so like make some fun cocktails.
Yes, and the Everything Iconic merch is also amazing. I want to... put a plug out there for that.
You guys are the best. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here.
And that was Danny Pellegrino, folks. I have to say that after recording that interview, I forgot to upload my audio onto our True Romance Dropbox account. When our editor, Katie, made me aware of that fact, for a second, I thought I'd lost it. I was sincerely worried about my friendship with Devin. I know, you know, Danny Pellegrino is important to both of us, but for Devin, he's been, I would say, sort of like a saint you could wear around your necklace, sort of a mentor, if you will.
I would live for a rosary with an engraved metal picture of Danny Pellegrino on it.
And he was so sensitive and so thoughtful, and I really appreciated that about him.
He is a wonderful voice of our generation. And when Carolina's was looking for her audio, my friendship with her did flash before my eyes from the moment I met her in her little sundress, Urban Outfitters sundress in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, to when we started our podcast, it all flashed before my eyes. I thought, listen, this woman, she's changed my life. And it's all about to be over with. No, I'm just kidding.
It was scary. I was scared. I thought, out of all the guests to audio to lose, I can't believe I'm going to lose Danny Pellegrino's.
As I told Carolina, I would have forgiven her if she lost the audio. I just never would have forgotten it.
You never would have. And any time that I did something that might have upset you, I know it would be piled on top of. And also, you forgot the Danny Pellegrino audio. And you know how I feel about that.
Yep. So listen,
Devin.
keep track of your recordings, and I'm going to go out on my Real Housewives tagline that my friend Jesse wrote for me, which was, I may write comedy, but I live for the drama.
My name is Carolina, and everyone wants to see the North and South.
Ooh! Great.
Thank you for tuning into True Romance. If you want to reach us, you can always find us at True Romance Pod on Instagram, or you can always email us any questions at trueromancepod@gmail.com. We're on email. Devin, I love you.
Love ya.
Catch you next time, folks.
Bye.